Okay, working now. We had a prayer train that went up the coast and had a great time on that prayer train. And it was a fun time, and I think it was a blessed time. many prayers, hundreds of prayers, went out over that train for our area and for the coastal area and even for the United States. And I'm anxious to see what God's going to do because of that. Marvelous things that He has in store for us. There's, I really believe, some things that were broken, some things that were planted in our prayer time. And so I think they're planning to do it next year, so you can put that on your calendar. How many of you remember Roy Rogers? Reruns. Yeah, some of you are too young to remember Roy Rogers. He had a horse named Trigger. And he had, it was a cowboy show. And he and his wife, Del Evans Rogers, were part of that show. And they were always apprehending bad guys and doing good. You may not have known it, but Dale Evans Rogers wrote a book called Angel Unaware. And it actually had to do with her daughter, their daughter, who was born with Down syndrome and lived to be almost 2 years old before she passed away. In this book, if you've never read it and if you can get a hold of it, I'd encourage you to do that because it's a really heart-wrenching or a heart melting story about her relationship with her daughter and how God, she felt like that God had just sent them an angel in their midst for a couple of years. Beautiful story. And I was on the internet this morning and I just typed in angelic encounters. There was 5,600,000 results for angelic encounters. I didn't read them all. Matter of fact, I didn't read any of them, to be honest with you. That was kind of mind-boggling. But I was wondering, you know, have you ever had what you think perhaps had been an angelic encounter? Many of you have, and I think I have. Just the way that some things have intervened and gone on in our lives. I'm reminded of Lot in the Old Testament. Lot was in a dire situation, and there were a couple of angels that showed up at his door and said, "Man, you're going to have to get out of here because God's going to destroy this city, Sodom." And what would you do if Lot came to you and said, the angels came to you and said, "Man, you need to leave your home. Something disastrous is about to leave your home." What would you do? I'd leave. You know what Lot did? He left when the angels grabbed him by the hand and drug him out of the city. I'm thinking, man. See, what happened is dark. I don't know. Anyway, when you live in a dark place, it's easy for darkness to creep on you. And you really don't see things the way they really are. And I think Lot had lived in Sodom so long that the darkness had kind of creeped upon him, and he was unable to really see clearly the reality of what was going on. But these angels came in, they drug he and his family away, and so how would you know if you were to encounter an angel? Let me see your ID. God's Secret Service. Oh yeah, here it is. How would you know? (Clears throat) Sometimes you wouldn't. Hebrews, we're in Hebrews chapter 13. We're going to begin with verse 2. And Hebrews 13 verse 2 says, "Don't forget to show hospitality to strangers, for some who have done this have entertained angels without knowing it." Did you know that an angel may be our next visitor here in Life Change? And what if we have passed by them? What if we have ignored them? What if we have not greeted them? I wonder, when I get to heaven, if an angel's going to come up to me and say, "Hey, Brad, I was at Life Change, and you didn't even say hi to me." If you knew you were going to encounter an angel, would you spend time with them? Would you like to just sit down with them and talk to them and get to know them? We don't have any first-time visitors here with this morning, but let's just say we did. What if Jason was an angel? He could be. So what is your attitude when you meet a stranger? You know, we're told from childhood, don't talk to strangers. And did you know that there are actually people who have a fear of strangers? I think it's called philoxenia. Fear of strangers. That's actually a thing. Fear of strangers. But you know what? It's okay when you're a child not to embrace every stranger probably a good idea. But when you get to be an adult, Scripture says to show love to strangers. That's what we're supposed to do. Show love to strangers. we talked about last week that we should treat our Christian siblings with love, to love them. And now this author of Hebrews says that we're to show love not only to our Christian brothers and sisters, but we're to show love to strangers. The second thing we find in this passage of Scripture is that we're to show love to prisoners. Show love to prisoners. In verse 3 of Hebrews 13, it says, "Remember those in prison as if you were there yourself. Remember also those being mistreated as if you felt their pain in your own bodies." Jesus ministered to a lot of people. Do you ever remember a prisoner that he ministered to? John the Baptist, he was not a prisoner at the time, but kind of in a roundabout way through the disciples. The thief on the cross, exactly. Yeah. He was being executed for crimes that he had committed, and Jesus decided he would minister to that guy while Jesus was suffering and dying for all of us. And you know, I think when Jesus is on the cross, if I were suffering and dying, do you think my mind would be on everybody else? You think my mind would be on somebody else? Shut up, I'm dying here. I would hope one day that I could get there, that I wouldn't be so self-absorbed that my heart wouldn't go out to someone who has a need, spiritual need, physical need, that my heart would not be so hard, or that I would not be so self-absorbed that I couldn't reach out and meet someone else's need. In this text, part of probably this author was referring to is during this time in the church's history, there were a lot of people who were being imprisoned because of their walk with Christ, because of their testimony. Richard Wurmbrandt disappeared in 1948. There's actually a movie about him called Tortured for Christ. I don't know if you've seen that. I would encourage you to watch that. I've seen the trailer. We'll one day see the movie. But Richard Wurmbrandt went missing for 8.5 years. His wife, there's been report that he was killed while in prison. And his wife, still holding on to hope because there was really no proof of that, was hoping that the reports that she had heard was not true. Wurmbrandt's disappearance was expected. And the reason for that is that anyone who acted contrary to the regime could expect imprisonment or death. At a Congress of cults held by the communist government, he asked for it. This says, religious leaders stepped forward to swear loyalty to the new regime. Sabrina, Richard's husband, asked Richard to wipe the shame from the face of Jesus. Richard replied that if he stepped forward, she would no longer have a husband. She said, I don't need a coward for a husband. So Richard stepped forward, told the 4,000 delegates that their duty as Christians was to glorify God and Christ alone. He returned home to pastor his underground church, promote the gospel amongst the Romanian Russians, and they smuggled Bibles into Russia disguised as communist propaganda. Then one day he disappeared. He shares a little bit about his imprisonment. There was a ceaseless round of torture and brainwashing. For 17 hours a day, repetitious phrases were dinned into his ears. Communism is good. Christianity is stupid. Give up, give up. And over the years, his body was carved in a dozen places and burned. He says, I prefer not to speak about those tortures through which I passed, because when I do, I cannot sleep at night. It's too painful. His jailers also broke many of his bones, including 4 vertebrae. Miraculously, he survived, while other martyrs did not. When he was released 8.5 years later, his wife is also imprisoned for about 3 years. In 1956, he was released, and she was released, and they went right back into the pastoral ministry. In 1965, the Western churches bailed him out of jail with a $10,000 ransom and decided to dedicate his life to assisting those who were suffering for Christ. This is what Richard says. He said, Sabrina and I were able to survive this ordeal through the power of love. If the heart is cleansed by the love of Jesus Christ, wrote Wurmbrandt, and if the heart loves him, you can resist all tortures. He goes on to say, God will not judge us according to what we have endured, but how much we could love. Let me read that again. God will judge us not according to how much we have endured, but how much we could love. I am a witness for the Christians in communist prisons so that they could love, and they can love God and men. How many of you know Chuck Colson? Know of him. So Chuck Colson became a Christian in 1973. In 1974, he was imprisoned in a Maxwell prison in Alabama as the first member of the Nixon administration to be incarcerated for the Watergate scandal. Now, if you're older than me, or as old as I am, you can remember that. And when Colson got out of prison, he started the Evangelical Prison Fellowship International, which is a thriving ministry today in many parts of the country, as well as over the world. So he took this statement in Hebrews chapter 13 to heart to visit those in prison. I went to New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. That's a mouthful. I graduated in 93. In 95, they started a ministry to the Angola State Penitentiary, which is in Louisiana. Angola is the largest maximum security prison in the United States, with 6,300 prisoners and 1,800 staff. It's located on 18,000-acre farm in Louisiana. As of 2009, and I don't have any recent figures, Angola had 3,712 inmates on life sentences. They're no longer having the death row, but they are on life sentences, making up 74% of the population that year. It is one of the most notorious prison facilities in the United States because of everything that takes place. In 1995, the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary began to take students and faculty up to Angola State Penitentiary and began to teach them and allow them to take seminary courses, allowing them to have a chaplaincy degree if they so chose to do so. And so after many years, there's been like 784 graduates with a chaplaincy degree. And they've actually started churches within the Angola State Penitentiary. One of the interesting things that I discovered once visiting down at the seminary was that during Katrina, when the hurricane came through New Orleans and wiped out and demolished a lot of things, they had to move a lot of the prisoners and the inmates out of the lower state of the United States to the upper part. And they put thousands at Angola State Penitentiary. The Christians at Angola State Penitentiary shared Christ with the inmates from the other areas, and many of them became Christians. And then when they got back to their own places of residence, they started their own churches and started their own evangelical work. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing how God can take horrible things, turn them into good things and great things? It's amazing. One of the reasons that God says that we need to visit prisons is because it doesn't matter how low you get, God still loves you. It doesn't matter how far off the beaten path that you find yourself, God still loves you. And He wants to show His love to you. So how in the world is He going to show His love to people who are strangers and who are in prison? How is He going to do that? Yeah, through us. Through us. I want to... The third thing says, show love to those who are mistreated. Show love to those who are mistreated. If you look at Jesus' life, he was always seemed to be connecting with and touching people who were on the fringes of society. People who no one else wanted to do anything with, or if they had anything to do with them, they were ostracized. And so Jesus influenced them, touched many lepers, had parties with tax collectors. People no one else had anything to do with, he had something to do with them. Have you ever heard of the pecking order? A pecking order. So the chickens, we'll just say the chickens, in their world, the most dominant chicken will peck the next chicken down the line. And that chicken will peck the next. No retaliation. That chicken's not going to fight against the most dominant chicken. So what he does is he starts pecking the next chicken down the line. And that chicken will start pecking the next chicken down the line until you get to the weakest chicken who's not going to retaliate against anything, and everybody starts pecking on him. It's kind of like a dad coming home from work, frustrated. He takes out his frustration on his wife. His wife takes out her frustration on the daughter. The daughter takes out her frustration on the son. The son takes out his frustration on the two-year-old, and the two-year-old kicks the dog. There's this pecking order that we live in. And Scripture says that we are to love those who are mistreated. So I want to ask you, who at where you are working or where you go to school, who gets bullied the most? Huh? You don't have to ask any, I mean, you don't have to tell me their names, but I want you to think about it. There's always someone who everybody else seems to pick on. I want to ask you another question. Are you one of those who are bullying someone else? So this scripture says that we're to love those who are mistreated. So who's going to love kids? Who's going to love those mistreated kids at school? Adults, who's going to love those mistreated coworkers? Who's going to do that? We are to love the unlovable. I think one of the reasons the author of Hebrews is talking to us about this is one of the reasons is I think it's very easy for a church to get cliquish. Okay? It's very easy to come into church and just talk to the people you know and not talk to strangers. What are they going to think of me if I talk to them? I don't know what to say. A church can become very cliquish. And we can separate ourselves from the rest of the world. It's safe just to stay in your own little cocoon and not to reach out to the world. That's the safe place to be. But that's not a healthy place to be. It's not a healthy place for Christians to be so consumed about their own little community. They're not reaching out. Scripture teaches us that we're to reach out to everyone, and it seems that Jesus reached out to those who no one else wanted to reach out to. So, the person that you identified as the most picked on or the one that's most bullied is the person the Lord wants you to reach out to and wants you to love. So, on your card, I want you to look at your card a minute. It says, first question is, have you ever had what you believe was an angelic encounter? And if you have, just kind of check that. If you haven't, that's okay. The second question is, who in your life do you find hardest to love? Is there a group, a culture, a segment of society you find difficult to love? Oh, I hate those Democrats. I hate those Republicans. Now, we can hate what groups stand for, but we can't hate the group. Okay? We can hate what they stand for, but we can't hate the group. Who would you not invite to church? Now, I know there's some of you have spoken to me and said, you know, there's been abuse by certain individuals toward me, and I think it's okay if you don't invite them to church. Okay. I don't want you to feel abused here at church. I think that's okay. But is there a peer person or group of people, just because of their ideas or the way they do things, that you would not invite to church? The last question, are there any changes the Lord is asking you to make regarding your attitudes towards someone or a group of people? There was an old cowboy that entered a church one Sunday, worn out clothes, worn out boots, and a worn out Bible. The church he entered was very upscale and was in an exclusive part of the city, and he entered the church and there were crystal chandeliers, beautiful carpet. People were dressed in their finest. Ornate statues, beautiful music. It's the most beautiful church this cowboy had ever seen. The building had stained glass windows, plush velvet carpet, cushioned pews. The church probably cost millions of dollars to build and maintain. The men, women, and children of the congregation were dressed in their finest and most expensive suits, dresses, shoes, and jewelry that the cowboy had ever witnessed. As the poorly dressed cowboy took a seat, the others moved away from him. No one greeted him. No one welcomed him. No one offered a handshake. No one spoke to him. They were all appalled at his appearance and did not attempt to hide the fact. There were many glances in his direction as the others frowned and commented among themselves about his shabby attire. A few chuckles and giggles came from some of the youth. The preacher gave a long sermon about hellfire and brimstone and a stern lecture on how much money the church needed to do God's work. When the offering plate was passed, thousands of dollars came pouring forth. As soon as the service was over, the congregation hurried out. Once again, no one spoke or even nodded to the stranger in the ragged clothes and boots. As the old cowboy was leaving the church, the preacher approached him. Instead of welcoming him, the preacher asked the cowboy to do him a favor. Before you come back in here again, have a talk with God and ask him what he thinks would be appropriate attire for worshiping in this church. The cowboy assured the preacher he would do that and left. The very next Sunday morning, the old cowboy showed back up for the services wearing the same ragged jeans, shirt, boots, and hat. Once again, the congregation was appalled at his appearance. He was completely shunned and ignored again. The preacher noticed the man still wearing his ragged clothes, boots, and instead of beginning his sermon, he stepped down from the pulpit, walked over to where the man sat alone. "I thought I asked you to speak to God before you came back to our church," the preacher said. "I did," replied the cowboy. "If you spoke to God, what did he tell you the proper attire should be for worshiping in here?" asked the preacher. "Well, sir," said the cowboy, "God told me that he wouldn't have the slightest idea what his appropriate attire for the worshiping in your church. He says he's never been here before." A lot of times we judge people by their appearance. If they don't look like us, if they don't smell like us, if they don't talk like us, then we don't want to have anything to do with them. What the Lord is trying to tell us is that He doesn't reject anyone. Neither should we. I was in a meeting the other day, and in this meeting, I'm on the Habitat Board for Humanity, and so we went to this training, and they showed three pictures. One was a beautiful young lady, one was an older lady, and then the one was this guy, tattoos all over his face and body and piercings all over, I mean, everywhere. And, you know, they asked us, when you see this picture, what do you think? When you see this picture, what do you think? So when certain people walk into this church that's not dressed like you, that's not what you would consider to be maybe church attire, what do you think? What do you think? And then I'm going to ask you this, what do you think God thinks? What do you think God thinks? This church community is known as a place where people can get healing. And the only way that happens is if we continue to love and learn to love on a deeper level. That's the only way this is going to happen. God has blessed us in many, many ways here. A lot of people who come here are broken and hurting. And many of you have been healed since coming here. But it's sometimes, and I'm not saying, I don't know of this going on, but just as sometimes you forget where you come from. And you feel like you've reached this level where you can't rub elbows with those same people that you used to rub elbows with. That you have outgrown them. And in some aspects you have, but in the aspect of learning to love them, learning to love the unlovable, learning to love strangers, learning to love those that are on the outskirts of society, learning to love the least. It's what God is calling us to do. Like what Richard Rumbrandt said, it's not God. God's not going to judge you on what you have endured. He's going to judge you on how much you love. I think only you can make that decision for yourself. How much do I love? And can I do better? How much do I love? Can I do better? One of the problems, and Renee and I were talking about this morning, is a lot of times people don't see the difference between Christians and non-Christians. A lot of people don't see any greater depth of love in Christians than they do non-Christians. A lot of times people don't see that there's a change in behavior in Christians and non-Christians. And perhaps the greatest hindrance to people coming to know Christ is the actions by some Christians. So I'm encouraging you this week to love the unlovable. Embrace those who no one else embraces. Share Christ with them, because no one else may. And what they need beyond anything else is to know and experience the love of God.